Blog Talk Radio.
Liftoff of Mission 41B, the first flight of the orbiter Discovery, and the shuttle has cleared the tower.
Good morning, everybody. Yes, once again, it's Colonel Badger with the Milwaukee Empire, bringing you some of the greatest leaders we have in America. These individuals, men and women, who are doing what it takes to create manufacturing jobs in America for Americans. And today, I have the honor of having two of the best in the world, two of the finest individuals that God has put on this planet to take us in the further into manufacturing than ever could dream possible. And I'll tell you about how they got their start and what they're doing with Liberty Tabletop and the whole nine yards. Gentlemen, good morning, and thank you for joining me on the show.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
My pleasure. So let's start at the beginning. Can you give us a short version of how you got started in manufacturing and what led you into doing things with Liberty Tabletop, gentlemen?
Well, I'll go ahead. We both worked for Oneida Limited, and Oneida Limited was the largest factory in the world that manufactured flatware, had 2,500 employees in Sherrill, New York. And I ran that factory in the early 2000s. Greg ran a factory in Mexico, next to near Mexico City, that manufactured flatware also, same factories. And the Oneida decided to close the facility, move all of the jobs to China, and Greg and I saw it as an opportunity to purchase the assets, and we felt that we could run the factory at a smaller pace and manufacture products in the United States and sort of bypass the middleman and sell direct to the customer. So our idea back in 2005 was to do some OEM manufacturing for some large flatware companies and then build a brand that we owned and could sell direct. And that's what we're doing right now.
Outstanding. For those people like myself who may not be understand what tableware is, can you tell us what that might be, what flatware is?
I'll take this one too, Greg, sorry. Well, flatware is knives, forks, and spoons. There's a term hollowware, and hollowware was the big trays and tea sets and the like. So we manufacture stainless steel knives, forks, and spoons here in Sherrill, New York, under the brand Liberty Tabletop. Our website's libertytabletop.com. And it's what you'd see in everyday, you know, you go to Macy's or any retail stores, you go online, look at our website at libertytabletop.com, and you'll see stainless steel flatware. We also do some silver plating. But one of the things that differentiates us, other than what we manufacture in the United States, is that we require that all of our steel is melted in the United States. So we know from cradle to grave what the customers. So basically flatware is knives, forks, and spoons. Open your drawer in your kitchen, and that's what we make.
Fascinating. I just did that. As you explained that to me, I pulled out three things at random, and all three I found were made in China. My wife and I will have a discussion about that this weekend, because as we get older and, you know, replacing, you know, things get broke, they get lost, they get whatever, we'll need to replace it, and I know that we'll be replacing it through the flatware that you guys make. There's no doubt about that.
Okay. Well, one of the interesting things about our business is we use a business-to-customer model. A lot of people, when they think of Made in the USA, they think, oh, geez, you know, it's going to cost me twice as much, I really can't afford that. And I've had that experience, too. I tried to buy a Made in America lawnmower and found that it was next to near impossible. Hopefully it's better. This was about 5 years ago, but maybe that's changed. But what we do is we use this direct-to-customer model to cut out all the middlemen, like Matt said. And what a lot of people don't realize is when you go into a department store and buy something for $100, the department store keeps $70 of that. That's their cut, 70%. And then pretty much everything that you buy today, whether it be silverware or a toaster or a blender, it's made in China, and there's a brand name on that, probably mm-hmm. something that you recognize from your childhood. And they're taking 50% of the $30 that's left over. Well, by the time you ship it halfway around the world, what you just paid $100 for, the manufacturer probably sold it to the brand name for $10. So it's that 90% differential or markup that we take advantage of. So two times a year I go out to the stores, and in the upper end flatware, which is we sell quality stuff, not the Walmart stuff. I look at the prices that people are paying for the imported stuff from wherever, and we benchmark off that. So you're not going to pay any more for good quality flatware from Liberty Tabletop made in the United States than you would for similar type 1810 quality flatware maybe made in China or Vietnam.
Well, I'll say this too. In my opinion, from the stuff that we buy as a family, I find when I buy some items which are made overseas, I don't get the quality, and I'm willing to invest more money in a product that will last longer than something I have to replace every couple of years.
Yeah, one great example is a toaster. I remember my grandparents, when I was a little kid, got a toaster for Christmas. And that's back when getting a toaster for Christmas was something important because they didn't have a lot of money. That toaster is still working today. My uncle has it. If you go buy a toaster for $7, it might last 6 months, and it breaks.
Yeah.
These things lasted 20, 30 years. So, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, we've become a throwaway society. How many televisions, when your television broke, you brought it down to the TV repair shop, and they'd fix it, and you bring it back home. Now it breaks, you throw it in the garbage. So you have a good point, and that's what we try to do, is we try to make something that will last a lifetime, and something that if you don't hand it down to your children, at least they get to see via the word of mouth advertising that, God, this is really good stuff. Where'd you get it? We got it from Liberty Tabletop, and look at their website. Look at what makes them different than every other flatware manufacturer. And I think we've done a really good job at getting that information out to the public.
I would agree. I know when I talked to Mr. Palmer from BuyDirect on my show the other day, he was all about you, and that's one of the reasons why I had to have you on this show, is because he was a good cheerleader for you. He assured me in the way that he talked towards and used his enthusiasm talking about you that I knew if I was going to buy flatware, nothing more than what Mr. Palmer said, that I would buy the best I could buy money-wise ever made in the world. And the word of mouth from people trusted, become trust agents, you can't buy that type of advertising. Quality is quality
right.
of itself.
Absolutely,
you know what I mean?
And we, you know, as our business online continues to grow, we're growing at about 50% year on year. A lot of it now is coming from word of mouth. I took over the customer service phone for a couple hours the other day and received two phone calls in a row from people, and I always ask folks, you know, how did you hear about us? And the answer from both of them was, well, my parents bought some flatware, they saw you online, and they got us the flatware as a gift, and one of them was adding to her set, and the other person was buying a set for her sister. So word of mouth and repetitive customers and people having good old-fashioned dinner parties and mentioning that the flatware was made in the United States, that's really driving our business, and it's important to us.
Absolutely. I mean, you cannot beat the fact that a loyal customer will tell people and wants to become that trust agent, as I mentioned before. That advertising is critical when it comes to continued success. It also goes to show the quality of the flatware you make because, yeah, I know being a guy, and this might sound stupid, but being a guy, flatware is not the top of one thing I think of every day, but quality is something I understand, right? So when I go to dinner parties, I'm drunk there with my wife, these things are mentioning. I'm going to sit there and say, yeah, you want to know the best? Don't go to Macy's. Go to your website and buy direct and save that money and know that you're helping Americans keep jobs and you get a really good product at the end of the day. You can't beat that sort of thing.
Yeah,
you're right.
We get a big chuckle these days when we go out to eat. And it used to be that the chefs and the owners of the restaurants, even the chain restaurants, took a little bit of pride in what they put on their table. And what you see even at upscale restaurants today is pretty pathetic. So we're hoping in the future to get into the commercial side of the business, the food service side of the business, and start getting our flatware out there in hotels and restaurants. In fact, we just did here in Syracuse, the Hotel Syracuse, brand new renovated hotel, and Ed Riley and the group of investors that put it together, they wanted to do everything made in New York, everything made in America. So they supported us and Harden Furniture and Stickley Furniture and a bunch of other local suppliers. And it's that sort of attitude that's going to help bring manufacturing jobs back to the United States.
I 100% agree. I know here my house was built in 1905. It was the first house built in a subdivision, and it needs to be restored. We have lots of issues with it, right? And due to my medical conditions, most of my money goes in doctor bills. And God, I think I put in 4 or 5 kids through college now. And we've had people come through the house for quotes to get things done, and they look at the woodwork, they look at the greenhouse, you know, the things that need to be done. And they go, I don't think we can do this kind of type of work anymore. We've lost the knowledge. Are you finding that true in manufacturing, that people don't have the knowledge needed to manufacture good quality things anymore? Or is that more on a case-by-case basis?
I think this gets into a little bit of a social aspect of manufacturing. Not everybody wants to go to college, okay? And not everybody wants to be a doctor, lawyer, Indian chief, engineer. Those people, and I think it was reflected in this past election, those people have been disenfranchised by our government. All of the opportunities they had to do a job with skilled labor, and anybody when someone tells me, well, these are not unskilled jobs, unskilled labor, that's a lie. I mean, if you go down into our factory and you tell me what jobs down there take no skill, and some of those jobs take years and years of experience to get to the point where you can consistently produce good product dealing with all of the different variables that occur. And it's through every industry and every different type of product, whether you're making socks or making cars or making flatware or bricks or whatever. So all of those skilled jobs have gone away. And the problem, and it's going to take time, but I know for a fact that there's a big cross-section of our society that's just dying to jump into a job that can become a career that is a skill and a craft. And like you said, there are certain things that are not, you know, people can't do that kind of stuff anymore. Or if you have someone that can do it, he's 80 years old and, you know, he doesn't do it anymore. He's retired. We have jobs in our factory. One in particular is where we make the tooling, where you do ornamental die cutting. When we ran the factory previously, first of all, you had to pass an aptitude test, and it took 5 year of apprenticeship. And you didn't necessarily mean you were going to be good when you were done with that. Some people washed out. So those jobs we need to fill, and we need to get back to our educational system, and people need to understand that vocational jobs, things that you do with your hands, number one, we have many, many millions of people that want to do that, okay, and let's train them, and then we can rebuild the manufacturing economy. It's opportunities that these kids don't have. So what do they do?
Good luck.
I don't know what they do.
I can tell you, I can only speak from what goes on we're seeing. Here, we put all the obstacles away from young men and women who want to do something out of their home. Maybe they bought a shop someplace and fix cars. And God forbid if they don't jump through all the hoops necessary to fix a car, right? I'm not saying they should take the oil and dump it in the gutter. I'm not. I'm saying that they make them get this permit, that permit, this other permit over there, get all kinds of inspections, cost them tens of thousands of dollars, in some cases, to open up even a music shop. Yet the kids who want to sling hash, you know, the drug dealers, nothing. Nothing impedes them. We punish the people, in my opinion, we punish the people who want to do good the right way, and there are no barriers against people who want to do stupid things because it's far easier for them to do. It's a serious problem.
Right. If you go on our website, libertytabletop.com, and look at, and Greg really is the architect of our website, and he's created a lot of what we call landing pages, and it explains what, why we are different, why we are better than the competition. So at Liberty Tabletop, we care about the environment. Okay, at Liberty Tabletop, we care about our coworkers. They're not employees. We work alongside them. We don't, they don't follow us. We walk side by side. Okay, we care about what the raw materials are that we put into it. Okay, so we do. We think of all of these things that our competitors don't. All right, they just want the cheapest product they can get on a boat and put it in a container, get it over here, and make as much money as possible. So that's the, that's what small businesses do. Like the people you're talking about, someone has a music shop, or they're, you know, they're trying to repair cars, or they have some kind of skill. Their heart and soul is poured into that business, and that's what Greg and I have done.
Absolutely, I want to thank you guys for doing so, because here, Racine has a long history in manufacturing. You know, we've invented the fractional horsepower engine. Dremel tool was invented here. Malted milk came out of a guy experimenting in his back shop with dairy products, right? I mean, we need to go back to that understanding. I have kids in my block that like to go and become a machinist. And the machinist in school, you don't want to do that. That's a dirty, filthy job. You don't want to be a machinist. You want to go to a four-year institution and do something else. It's like, that you get a kid to go to four-year college, they have student debt that they can't even afford to even to pay back. Yet the machinists that get jobs here are making, you know, $50,000-$60,000 a year after they walk out of the tech school.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All you have to do is look to the education system that they've implemented in Germany, which has a wage structure and obviously a standard of living similar to the United States. But what they do is they have trade schools. And they encourage manufacturing. They teach the young kids that want to go into it the skills that are necessary and which supports business. And as a result, instead of being running huge trade deficits, they actually run trade surpluses. And the United States, hopefully the current administration will study up on what the Germans are doing, and maybe there's some good ideas that we can borrow from them.
Right. I think you're right. I think one of the things that we're seeing, which is kind of starting the corner, is that our public library took the lead when it came to making this makerspace, where they can get kids of all ages, and I consider myself to be a kid sometimes with technology, and they can put them down, they can say, this is a 3D printer, do you want to learn more about this? This is how it works, this is what it can do. And they educate youth that this is a very viable idea to get some good jobs, because as we all know, there's more and more being done with 3D manufacturing and remote manufacturing. It's incredible what people can do now, but we still need the basic skills.
Yes, we do.
And absolutely. And, you know, the other thing that this will help, and you talk about, we need to invest in our inner cities. We need the young men and women that live in the inner cities need to have the same opportunities. To get a skill, get a trade, work at a facility, a manufacturing facility where they're creating value, and they have pride. They get a paycheck every week. They have the ability to get a bonus. You know, they can be a productive member of society. If you have no opportunity, you need to feed yourself, and you find a way to do it. And sometimes it's by breaking the law. And if we could invest in the inner cities from the standpoint of giving them the opportunity to better themselves through working in these type of industries that we can bring back here, we would solve a lot of social issues without trying to Band-Aid them.
And I think perhaps that's the opportunity that manufacturing can give us, is if we can do local manufacturing, give that sense of pride back to the community. I think you're correct. I think it spreads because, and to me, a guy who has pride in what they do for work will take pride in the property that they may own or rent and keep that maintained, which causes crime to go down. Their kids grow up thinking, I can do better with this, like my father's shown me that can be done or my mom has shown me that can be done, you know, versus saying, I have no help. You know, I have no hope. I have no help. God save me. You know,
right.
Go ahead,
another thing that should be brought up is a lot of us are looking to Washington to solve all of our problems. We're sort of waiting for the politicians, be it whoever they are, to step up to the plate and reverse some of these ridiculous decisions that they've made that have really sent manufacturing back on its heels. Actually, we don't need to wait for Washington. We can vote every day with our pocketbooks. And this is something that I like to talk about frequently, is that when you go to buy a pair of tennis shoes or a pair of blue jeans or a set of flatware, go to the computer, type in blue jeans made in the United States, and you'll find several companies out there that will sell you a pair of blue jeans, same business model that we have, direct, so you're not really going to pay that much more, but you can support jobs in the United States and proudly wear those blue jeans. Unfortunately, there's a lot of products that you can't find that are made in the United States. I don't look at that as a problem. I look at that as an opportunity. And I really hope that other like-minded folks that maybe know of a factory down the road that is shut down, maybe the equipment is still there, maybe they would have to go find some investment money, will start making toasters in the United States and television sets and other things, so that people like me who, first thing out of the blocks when I need something, I'm going to type in, you know, whatever I need, made in USA, that I have a chance of finding it. And I would encourage everybody to give that a shot.
Right. You mentioned something interesting about mothballed factory with perhaps machinery that could be used if you get startup capital to do that. How hard was it for you to take over that factory and get things going again, made in America versus seeing it all go overseas?
Our biggest challenge was to be able to run it at such a small pace and still make money, because this factory in the late 90s was making 3.5 million pieces per week, and we had to figure out a way to do it at 35,000 pieces per week. So as far as taking over the factory, we had a lot of experienced people, and we had a lot of the technology really wasn't mothballed. March 21st, 2005, I worked for NIDA Limited. March 22nd, 2005, I worked for Sherrill Manufacturing. So we didn't have an issue where things were shut down, but we've had a challenge trying to take technology that had been engineered for many, many years to make millions of pieces and try to make thousands of pieces. So that's been one of the big challenges. And then the challenge from Greg's standpoint is, you know, our costs are higher. So, you know, he's trying to sell our products. He has to be very creative, and that's where the B2C model came. And actually, like Greg said, if you go out and look online, you'll find, and every day another one pops up, a small company that's bypassed the 80-90% markup that you end up paying when you go to bricks and mortar. But the answer is that there was no real mothballing issue. The other challenge is to get small. We bought this factory. It was a million square foot factory. And now we have plans. We did sell the land and buildings. We're a tenant now, because we don't have the wherewithal to develop the industrial park. We will probably be next year into about 120,000 square feet. So we right-sizing the business was the really, really big issue that we had to deal with, both Greg and I, from a sales standpoint and operations.
Interesting. Let me rephrase the question then. Let's say that Wayne Klingman finds out there's a factory in Racine, Wisconsin, that makes the Daisy-type air rifles. You know, we remember the BB guns when we were kids, right? And I think there's a market for that. But this factory has been mothballed. Do you think the resources exist that would allow me at this day and age to gain, if I had a successful business plan and other things necessary, to improve investors that this is capable and a good idea to find that money, or is things not so easy to find?
Well, I think it's coming back. When we first started looking for capital to expand our business and diversify away from the OEM model back before the Lehman collapse, it was very difficult to find any sort of venture capital that was interested in good old-fashioned greasy manufacturing. Everything was high-tech. It's got to be, if you don't use your thumbs to operate it, they weren't interested in it. So that is all changing. In fact, I had a very interesting meeting a couple of weeks ago with a group that is focused on high-tech venture capital. But what they found was that in a lot of cases, the actual products needed to be made somewhere, and these young entrepreneurs were trying to cobjob it together in their basements, and they really didn't have the experience, and they didn't have the equipment necessary to do it. And so what they were trying to do is put together a portfolio of smaller, maybe open-minded manufacturers like ourselves that would be willing to take on certain projects with them, and if one of their projects needed some buffing or some metal forming, we would be on a list of people that they could go to and outsource here locally in the United States the production of their of whatever it was that they had invented. And I've also heard in sort of banking and investment circles that the concept of private capital coming together and investing in the onshoring or reshoring of manufacturing in the United States has woken up and is now available. So 10 years ago, I think it would have been next to near impossible. Nowadays, I think investors are warming up to the idea.
Great. That's fantastic news. That's wonderful news, because I think we're in agreement that we see some interesting possibilities that we all can get behind. Because I don't care if you're Republican, a Democrat, or believe in giant green aliens from Mars, I think we all want to see more Americans get back to work if at all possible.
Right, because this road that we're on of increasing trade deficits and budget deficits and more people out of work and non-productive, it's not sustainable. And I think even the most ardent supporters of globalization sort of recognize that. We need some balance in our economy, and I think that's going to bode well for the manufacturing industry, and hopefully we'll, I don't think we're going to go back to the days of Laverne and Shirley where we have these huge factories, and I certainly can't envision having 2,500 employees here at Cheryl ever again, but it would be nice to think that we might have a couple hundred and mixed in with a little automation and get this thing cranked back up again.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you very, very much for being on the show. You made my day. It's nice talking to like-minded people. I'm going to ask you for two favors, if you could, please. If you know of anybody else who'd like to be on the show to talk about some of the subjects we talked about, I'd appreciate a lead to that. And I'd really like to talk to your steel melter, if that's the right word, foundry, because that's a whole subject area I'm very, very interested in. And I did not know they were even doing that in the United States much anymore.
We can hook you up with our distributor, and maybe Greg, you can do that. But yeah, the steel industry is not what it used to be, but it's still a pretty strong business, and there's a number of very large mills, and a lot of that they've thrived on the Buy American Act. You know, when you're doing these big infrastructures, which is a good thing, is they want U.S. steel. But it'd be a good discussion for you to have with our steel manufacturers.
Absolutely. Well, the little English lady is giving me my countdown, so I have to let you guys go. But again, I thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for being on the show. I thank Mr. Palmer for telling me about you. He racks out. He gets a special Empire Milwaukee. Thank you. And with that, you guys have a great day. It's been an honor.
Thank you
very much.
All right. Thank you. Have a great day, gentlemen.
Yep. Bye-bye.
What a nice show. These are great guys. And check out the webpage at Liberty Tables app. Do me a favor. Do the Empire a favor. Make the Empire love you even more than we do already. And check out the webpage. I thank everybody for listening to the show. I thank you for the words of the support. I thank you for the Twitter interactions. Yay, go us. And follow me on Twitter at the Milwaukee Empire. Talk to you all later. Thanks again. Bye-bye.